Lonesome switchback mountain road. She drove out carrying no load. Everything she had, it was burning away. Everything she felt or was yearning to say, she drove away.
That's Suzanne Jarvie with Headless Rider from her wonderful sophomore release, In the Clear. In the Clear is a gorgeous slice of Americana songwriting. Great songs beautifully played with a crystal clear voice that comes over like Emmylou Harris in her prime. The follow-up to her critically acclaimed debut album, Spiral Road, it's another winner. A fabulous album, and as far as I'm concerned, the best album of 2019 so far. And with that intro, I'm pleased to welcome Suzanne Jarvie to Folk Roots Radio. How are you doing today, Suzanne?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
I got to say, I was blown away when I first received this album. Your publicist put a note on it saying that I would really like it. And, you know, she's a good judge because from the first time I listened to it, I was just blown away. It's just absolutely fabulous. I was actually a little surprised because you were someone who, for some reason, hadn't made it onto my radar, and I was trying to work out how I never heard about Spiral Road. But now I do, and having had a chance to listen to that album as well as this one and understand the stories behind your music, you know, I'm just so thrilled to be able to talk to you today.
Thank you. It's really an honor, and I'm quite humbled by your comments. I'm very grateful.
So this new album, it is the second album. Now, Spiral Road came out of a family tragedy. What I can only imagine was a horrible, horrible thing to happen. Your eldest son falling down a spiral staircase. I gather from what you have shared in your notes that came out with both albums that, you know, the doctors didn't expect him to survive.
That's right. It's such a funny memory too, because it was Canada Day. It was July the 1st in 2011, and I remember the weather so clearly because I had been at the swimming pool with one of my younger kids, and I'd come back and it was about 7 o'clock in the evening, and it was like 85 degrees out, and the sky was blue, and my older son was up north at his grandfather's farm with my ex-partner and his twin sister, and I got this call, and it was the call, right? It was that terrible call, and we got to the hospital, we got the complete summary. He was flown in by helicopter to a hospital for sick children in Toronto. He was operated on immediately, and we were told by the head neurosurgeon that it was very grim, and that we should prepare ourselves. We should go be with him in ICU, and there was sort of a hint about, you know, did we want to think about organ donation? And yeah, so that was the initial prognosis, was that that death was very likely. So it's not the way it turned out.
No, obviously wonderful that, you know, that he started to recover, and I think, as I gather, it was during that period of being there for him and supporting them, and you know that you were all there, you know, trying to will him to come out of the coma and start the recovery phase. That seems to be when your music started to flow through you. Is that right?
I think that's fair. Yeah, that's right. I mean, he was in a coma for approximately a week, and I don't remember a lot about that time. I slept in a very small, dark room that they keep for parents near the ICU, and every day we were watching for signs, and there weren't very many of them. And it was just everything was so dark and quiet. And but one morning at the end of a week, I got a call from the nurse really early saying that he was responding to commands. And so, yeah, there was this crazy kind of emotional, I don't know, I mean, ecstasy or just unbelievable kind of miraculous joy. And so we his recovery began slowly but surely, and it was sometime in the 2 or 3 weeks after he began to wake up that I was home just sitting in my living room between hospital visits, and my guitar was just lying around. And it was the strangest thing. I picked up my guitar. I was feeling very spaced out and kind of still in shock. And I just wrote a song. I wrote Before and After, which is the first song on Spiral Road. And that was sort of the beginning of this huge wave of writing that I'd never experienced before.
It's an amazing story because it sounds truly like it came from another place. I when I was reading your bio, there was something in there about the fact that as a child, I think that you'd actually developed a bit of stage anxiety by, you know, in performance by something that happened. And, you know, to go through a phase of not, you know, really, you know, feeling like, you know, you could write and perform, and then suddenly all of this coming out of you. And I guess a lot of it probably, you know, just rushed out, didn't it?
It did. And you're right, I had really bad stage fright as a child. I had performance anxiety, like, you know, whether it was singing or playing instruments, because I did play piano, and whether it was a recital or anything else, I just could not get control of that anxiety. But yeah, after that initial song, which kind of came out in this you know, in this burst. And I remember sitting there going, wow, did I do that? That's interesting. That's really interesting. And I would say over the weeks and couple of months that followed, there were just so many moments like that where there was a lot of poetry that came out. There was, and mostly with melody attached to it. And so I was just writing song after song, and kind of not analyzing particularly what was going on, but definitely sitting back and sort of wonder and thinking about the mysterious nature of songwriting, because in my whole life I'd never really been able to do that.
Well, when I read your lyrics for this album and listening to the lyrics from Spiral Road, it seems quite clear that you're a beautiful lyricist. Were you writing poetry, you know, in your earlier years?
Yes, I was. I was writing lots and lots of poetry, some of it probably really terrible poetry and some of it not so terrible. But yeah, I was definitely doing a lot of creative writing, you know, late adolescence and through my 20s and 30s. And I have lots of old kind of dog-eared, tea-stained booklets and papers and just piled up in closets from that those periods of my life. But never, it was never attached to music, is what's interesting. And I played so much music in my life, you know, with friends or in my bedroom, a lot of singing. But I had never had sort of the union of lyrics and melody come together like that until this happened. So I have some theories about it. I mean, there's been quite a lot written about the connection between trauma and creativity, and I'm sure that some aspect of what was going on with me is related to that. It has something to do with the mind shutting down. You know, the mind is a busy, chattering, analytical, controlling mind that goes on constantly with people, right? And there's only a few things that can sort of shut that down, and I think crises and extreme life events can sometimes do that. And I really do think that's what happened with me.
And it really just opened it up.
It opened it up. It's like,
yeah,
it's like a door opened.
Yeah.
It's like my mind closed and a door opened. And it's been open ever since.
Yeah. Well, there was 11 tracks on Spiral Road, so they must have come quite quickly, right, in that period of time?
They did, yeah. I would say I wrote, and there was more. I mean, I chose the ones I wanted. There were, you know, there were more than 11 tracks. But yeah, they did come quickly. I think I wrote all of that, I don't know, probably within 6 to 8 months. And I didn't even know at first what to do with it. It took me a little while to actually sort of move through the steps of... At first, I took it to my circle of musicians who I play with regularly, and then I kind of evolved from there, and I stuck my toe in the water and sort of thought aloud about making a record, which was an interesting process, too.
So In the Clear is the follow-up. That is another 10 tracks on that album. I imagine that must almost feel a bit surreal when you look back at what's happened over the last few years.
It completely surreal. If somebody had said to me when I was 30... You know, when you're older, you're going to have a wave of creativity and songwriting. You're going to make records. You're going to perform. I would have said, no way. No way. It is surreal. And you do, I think when you write and like a song, I sort of think of songs like babies sometimes, you know, you the genesis is inside you, but then you deliver them. And then they kind of have a life of their own. And when you stand back from them, there's this, a weird sort of objectivity. It's similar with your children. It's like, well, I made them, but they're of me, but they're not me. They're their own people. And it's the same with the songs. Like I can stand apart from the songs and go, wow, I wrote that. Isn't that interesting? And sometimes I listen to them and I really feel like I'm inside them. And sometimes I listen to the songs and it's like it's somebody else.
Hmm. Well, certainly I know from the first time I put it on, I mean, I just read a review from someone who said that, you know, this album really deserves to be listened to as a whole, because I'm talking about the new album, but, you know, all the tracks, they just, they all speak to you, and somehow together, it's like these wonderful voices all coming out at the same time. Let's talk about the first track from the new album. That was Headless Rider from the album In the Clear. Now, that is a song that I think you wrote based on your daughter's experience with, you know, what happened to her twin.
Yes, yes. It's funny because at some point after I'd written Spiral Road, I think my daughter Sarah, who sings with me on the record, by the way, that's her on Headless Rider singing all the harmonies. So she said something petulant to me about, like, why are you only writing songs about Julius, my son Julius? Why don't you write something about me? So I said, well, I it's not really up to me. And she said, oh, don't be silly. And I said, no, honestly, I really have to wait and see if something comes. So I said, but you know what, I'll plant that seed. And so sure enough, I kind of let it germinate, and then Headless Rider came out. And, you know, my daughter had her own experience of trauma in all of that, and I think has spent a long time trying to figure out what the fallout is for her. And a lot of the metaphors in that song are really trying to capture that feeling of breaking free. Somebody reviewed the record recently and said that there's an incredible sense of sort of movement and freedom, but also desperation. And I think that some of that is supposed to be captured, you know, musically and lyrically, just flying away, flying through and beyond, you know, your problems and your trauma, and not being defined by it.
Well, it's certainly it's a great start. It's a great song and a great start to the album. And I imagine, you know, you all, with the ground shifting beneath your feet for everybody, and, you know, the fact that, you know, you have, you know, you're a mother of four. I should also mention you're also a lawyer, which is the day job, which it still blows my mind. And if people are out there thinking, well, you know, I think it really speaks to the mystery behind creativity that suddenly, as you mentioned before, you have this sudden release. I mean, it's, I know you're a fan of science fiction, but I'm almost thinking it's something like out of Altered States or something, just sudden rush of everything coming out of you.
It is. And, you know, it's cool because now I've noticed that when I'm really ensconced in something at work, like a file that's really sort of complex, and I have to dive deep into really a set of facts and law that takes a lot of concentration and focus, or I'm writing some long memo, and I'll have a really intense period of focus on that, which is like left brain, you know, really analytical, kind of cold, clinical stuff. I find that often, at the end of a little period like that, I'll have a huge burst of creativity. It just, it's almost like a byproduct. It just, this juice just runs out of the other side of my brain, and sometimes it'll come out as really something funny and silly, and sometimes it'll come out in songs. But it's definitely stimulates something on the other part of my brain. I think it's really cool.
I'd like to play another track from the album just now, and we're going to play Point Blank, which is a song I think that it's quite different to some of the other songs on the album. But I think it also speaks to the fact that your son is doing much better, but, you know, because of the nature of the injury that he received, you know, the road is still fraught with challenge. And I wanted to give you a chance to talk about this song, and then we'll play it.
Yeah, the road is very difficult. And I think in the early days, you know, when he was recovering, there was you just dream and you hope that somehow they'll fully recover and everything will go back to the way it was. And that's just not going to happen. And people who have brain injuries face a number of really difficult challenges, and one of which is mood swings and, difficulty self-regulating. And my son has definitely got moments that are incredibly challenging for me in terms of his what comes out of his mouth and the things he says and when his filter's down. And Point Blank is, I wrote Point Blank after he had been over at my house one day, and it had just been like a really awful sort of roller coaster ride. Just there had just been exchanges and an interaction which was really painful. And then by the time he left, it was sort of like the sun was breaking through the clouds, and it was as if nothing had happened. And I just went to my music room, and I wrote this song actually very quickly. But that's really what it's about, kind of feeling like you're a little boat on an ocean just getting beaten up by the waves. And then all of a sudden, the wind calms down and the water's flat.
Let's play that just now. This is Suzanne Jarvi with Point Blank from her wonderful second album, In the Clear. And you're listening to Folk Roots Radio. And I'm Jan Hall.
Blowing like a hurricane, move out in a slow rain. Mind bent up and insane, killing me like a freight train, baby. Don't you get to feel strange, like Shane on the old Grange. 35 millimeter frame, it's a movie size blame game. Point blank range, get down on your knee. You're gonna say thank you, yeah. You're gonna say please, despite all the possibilities. I found no cure. Point blank. We fly down to the South Pole. Drop into a black hole. One man on a spaceship, another one on his last trip. Yeah. If you had all the lifespan, living high, living low rent, straighten out what's been so bad. It makes you wonder where the time went. You get down on your knee. You're gonna say thank you, yeah. You're gonna say please. Something hard has set you free. I found no cure. Never bridesmaid, like a never ending downgrade, baby, or something that the Lord made. Yeah. At point blank range, no more degrees, no one to ask if you believe. Give and told. Give you one thing, 10 knots on a gold string. There in the unraveling, you're gonna hear the rinsing. Point blank range, no more degrees, no one to ask if you believe. Give it so. Love alone.
That's Suzanne Jarvi with Point Blank from her fabulous new album, In the Clear. I can't speak about how much I love this album. It truly was such a wonderful surprise that when it arrived in the mail. And, you know, Suzanne's a special guest on the show today. And, you know, you were mentioning when we were talking before about all of these songs coming out of, you know, experiences that you've gone through with that tragic accident that affected your son and then, you know, going through the recovery phase. But the interesting thing about the way you write songs is that even if you didn't actually know the story behind this album and the past album, you know, the critically acclaimed Spiral Road from 2014, there's something that speaks to us all generally. And I found that when I'm listening to your songs, you can really connect to them. And I don't know, is that just the style of the poetry that you write that becomes the lyrics?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how to respond to somebody else's experience, except to say that I couldn't hope for anything more than to have someone like yourself say back to me that there was enough room, even though the song might be about something very specific or an experience, that there's enough room for you as a listener to have your own interpretation and take your own meaning away from it, that's private and personal to you. I think every songwriter could not hope for anything more than that, is that it has that dual meaning, you know. That's the way I feel about Neil Young, you know. It's just exactly like that, is that he has these amazing lyrics that, you know, they're based in some personal experience and somehow they connect directly to you as well. So thank you for that.
Well, it's interesting you bring up Neil because, you know, one of the things he does say is the, you know, the fact that he really has no clue where his music comes from. It just comes. And, you know, and he channels. And I certainly get the impression from the conversation we've been having and some of the things you've talked about that it seems to be quite clearly that, you know, that there is a huge channeling of creativity coming through you just now, which is fascinating because, again, you know, you've been a lawyer for, you know, a lot of your life. It's been your day job. You now suddenly have this burgeoning music career with a second album. And yet when I watch videos, you're so natural and it just gets me. It's like, you know, it's like I could, you know, there could have been another road or maybe there's another reality out there where Suzanne Jarvi just went straight into music.
Yeah, I feel the same way. There really could have been another road or a parallel universe. And, you know, that's part of that fits perfectly with my sci-fi obsession anyways. So I'm trying to figure out how to walk that road right now. Actively and channeling, it definitely channeling is what's going on. I do not sit at my desk at an appointed time in order to quote unquote songwrite ever. Like not ever. Something just comes in and I just have to hope my phone is nearby so I can grab it before it disappears. You know the way you try to remember dreams as you're waking up, and if you wait too long, they're completely gone. It's very similar. Tom Petty actually said the same thing. That Neil Young said, he talked about just the incredibly mysterious, weird way that songs come in and that he doesn't even want to analyze it too much because he's afraid it's going to go away. I feel the same way.
No, that's great. Let's talk about the making of the album because, you know, we haven't talked about one of the most important people in this project and the last album. That would be Chris Brown from Wolf Island, who I first met when he played the Hillside Festival, and I was trying to work out what the date was, but with the Open Heart Society, one of his bands,
right,
way back in the day.
Right.
And I have a wonderful, warm feeling every time I think about that performance because the band were great. We all loved them. Just absolutely fabulous. And he really is building a wonderful reputation as a producer. Can you talk a little bit about his involvement in this project?
Sure. Chris is a phenomenal producer. And I was introduced to him through Gregor Beresford, who played drums on all of Spiral Road and is playing drums on some of the tracks on this record. I put a feeler out to him, sort of saying, you know, he was an old high school friend. I said, I've written a bunch of music. I've been thinking about making a record. Do you have any idea somebody who, you know, might be suitable for me? And he instantly introduced me to Chris. And it was an amazing process with Chris. You know, we met cold. We never met before. I knew what Chris's past, musical past, but he just came and sat in my kitchen, and we laid down all these bed tracks, and then before I knew it, we went into his studio and made Spiral Road, which was just an unbelievable experience for me, never being in a studio before. Chris is an incredible musician as well. He's an amazing pianist, keyboard player. He plays pretty much every style of keys you can think of. And so he plays on the records that he makes in addition to producing them. And he's got an amazing sense of composition, so he can kind of toggle back and forth between fixed ideas that, you know, I have as an artist or that other artists have, and just that process of allowing, you know, when you're in the studio and somebody comes in for the afternoon to play on three tracks, there's only so much control you want to exert. You want to let them listen and just to see what happens, because magic happens all the time. You know, suddenly a little motif plays, or there'll be a phrase that gets played and you're like, that's it, right? Like that, or some incredible solo comes out that you didn't compose. And so working with Chris is amazing, and the Wolf Island environment is amazing. I mean, he makes records there in this small hobbit-like cabin that used to be the old post office, and he's got great equipment, and you know, the sound and the acoustics are phenomenal. So he's really sort of a centerpiece for me, like a linchpin for me in all of this, and has guided me so much and had a lot of patience as well while I just, you know, worked through wrinkles and self-doubt and all of that stuff. So yeah, he's just amazing. And as you know, he's producing, in the last couple of years, he's produced so many incredible records. So yeah, it's just been, he's an amazing person.
And what about the people that play on the album? I mean, are they people that you brought together, or are they people that Chris suggested, or is a combination of both?
I would say mostly Chris. The one connection for me is Eric Schenkman, who is actually playing the amazing guitar track on Point Blank that you just played. And Eric is a very old friend of mine from high school. We're very good friends. And he's a brilliant guitar player, incredibly creative guitar player, blues guitar player, really edgy. And he's, I mean, you know him from Spin Doctors, but he's very much a journeyman. Like, he's got his own blues projects going on all the time. So I brought him in to play on a number of songs on Spiral Road, and I brought him back to play on two songs on In the Clear. The rest of the musicians are phenomenal, and they're mostly Chris's kind of connections in musical community, like Tony Scherer, who's a bass player and a guitar player who lives in New York, played all over both records, like baritone guitar and electric guitar and acoustic guitar. The Abrams brothers, who are, you know, amazing Canadian musicians, bluegrass musicians. So all the fiddle that you hear on the record is James Abrams, and some of the beautiful acoustic guitar you hear is John. There's like Mickey Raphael is playing harmonica on the core. You know, Michael Blake is playing the sax and the flute. He's out of New York. There's just so many incredible musicians. And even Hadley McCall Thaxton, who's the young musician from Georgia who's living on Wolf Island now, who just made her debut record, is singing backups on Point Blank. So, yeah, it's and I haven't even mentioned them all. So
no, I did. I was going to say, people need to get their own copy of this album and buy the CD, because it comes with, you get the lyric sheets, you get all of the information about the album. And this is an album, I kid you not, you really need to have in your collection. We're going to go back to the album now with the title track, which actually has Burke Carroll playing dobro on it as well. I noticed his name wasn't mentioned, and certainly deserves to be in there, because we don't want to slight anybody. Now, the title track seems that there's almost a dreamlike quality to this, and it seems to be that place that you go to, I don't know, to provide some relief from everything that's going on around you. Can you talk about this song?
Yeah. In the Clear is actually a song I wrote a while ago, and it has a dreamlike quality to it. It's for me, it's this meditation on longing for relief and a kind of freedom, and for somebody to I guess I used to, I don't do it anymore, but for a long time after my son's accident, I had this fantasy that somebody was just going to shake me and wake me up and go, it's all over. It's all over. It was just a dream. Your son is fine. And everything's going to go back to normal. So it was sort of, I got a chance to be objective about that and step back from that and realize that it was a feeling I needed to honor, but also to let go. And so, and also to accept that there's actually a lot of everything's perfect right now, here, right now. And so the song has a lot of that in it in terms of the message. The rest of it in terms of metaphors, and I'd like to leave, you know, some of that to the imagination of the listener.
And there's a lot of Western imagery sprinkled through this album. Is that, again, to create, you know, worlds that other people can connect with?
I think so. I mean, I love rural, natural world Western imagery because of the freedom. It just operates as this recurring metaphor in my mind. And it does link with, even with space as a kind of frontier or whatever. Sorry to get all Star Trek-y on you, but I think I love the way that's represented in those metaphors. And that's even the way I have that line about Shane, like Shane on the Old Grange, right? Like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
Shane,
oh,
right?
My God. So, I get goosebumps when you even mention the name.
Well, because Shane is such a strange film, too,
yeah.
Right? It's, you know, it's a very weird film, and it's a brilliant, beautiful, haunting film about this man who comes down out of the mountains sort of from nowhere. And anyways, so, yes, I do love that imagery, I admit.
Yeah. Well, my dad used to love Westerns, and I still think about the end of that movie a lot. So that was just so good. Let's play this song just now. This is Susan Jarvi with the title track from her wonderful album, In the Clear. And you're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
Maybe if I open for the man behind the bright green door, you won't see the real me or anything that I stand for. Maybe if I lose this frame, I won't have to be ashamed. I'll hold on to heaven's mane in the saddle of your heart. Somewhere far away from here, long before the sun appears, you will feel every single fear. You will feel that feeling till you're back in the clear. Brand new sheriff comes to town, plans to bring the outlaws down, shines his gun and he feeds his horse by the rivers of remorse. Maybe if you close your eyes, you won't see the little flies. Bet you'll miss the desert sky and say goodbye to gray. Somewhere far away from here, long before the sun appears, till you're back in the clear. at the cherry blossom fair. Pale pink petals are raining down on apple carts and plastic crowns. Take a breath and jump right off the swimming rock to the swallow's loft. Step inside the giant box and say hello to Gray. Somewhere far away from here, long before the sun appears, you will feel every single fear. You will feel it till you're back in the clear.
That's Susan Jarvi with the title track from her great new album, In the Clear. I can't speak highly enough about this one. It's just absolutely fabulous. It's now available on Wolf Island Records. And I think I mentioned before we played that song that this is an album that you must get. And definitely get the CD version if you want to get the whole experience. Susan Jarvi is our special guest on Folk Roots Radio today. We're chatting about the album. So Suzanne, you've got like, you know, two wonderful albums in. I think you also made an EP before as well. I noticed that, you know, that you're big in Europe, big in the Netherlands and Ireland, from what I can gather. I'm not sure whether Canada or North America's quite cottoned on to you yet, though, have they?
We're working on it. You know, it's the European connection was really amazing, and what I didn't know about Netherlands especially, but also Sweden and a lot of Northern Europe, is that they are really, really into Americana and roots music. So there are phenomenal circuits that you can play on. They're small, beautiful, intimate venues with listening audiences who really pay attention to the music. So yes, as far as, you know, North America goes, Bernadette, who's my wonderful publicist, is, you know, working on getting the record out there and into people's hands and getting people to listen to it. We're working on the Canadian connections too, but it seems to be a little bit of a tougher road to hoe. You know what I mean? I'm not sure what it's about. It almost feels like the European audiences are eager to consume brand new stuff that nobody's heard and to be the first to weigh in on, you know, what's making the big impressions, as opposed to, I almost feel like there's a little bit more reticence over here. Well, we want to wait until it's been validated somewhere else, and then maybe we'll step in, because it's almost like a lack of self-confidence or something like that. So I detect a little bit of that over here.
So today is actually the release day, is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. So what happens now? Then you mentioned that you're working on things. I'm wondering about performing live with this album. Are there going to be opportunities for North American audiences to check it out? Obviously, I imagine that you'll have another tour across to Europe sometime later.
Yeah, I do actually have a tour that's getting booked right now for May. So I'll be going over to the Netherlands in May, and we're still trying to figure out whether there'll be some dates in England and Ireland on that tour or on a follow-up tour. And yes, we are going to be working on a number of dates in Ontario, but they're not secure yet. So anybody who's interested, you can just check my website. As soon as we have dates booked, they'll be going up there. And I'm going to be booking a CD release party shortly, probably in late February, in Toronto, and that'll go up on social media and my website as well. So I guess just stay tuned for that info.
Yeah, and all of the information will be up on susanjarvi.com. And I know there are people that check out this show from Europe as well as across North America. So you've got to see her live if you can. Check out the videos. If you follow the links and head to YouTube through Suzanne's website, you can also see some great videos of her performing. And I got to say, Suzanne, this is one of those interviews where I gush all the way through, but people need to check out your music. I truly feel honored to be doing this interview today. It's an absolutely fabulous album, In the Clear. And also check out Spiral Road if, like me, you haven't had a chance to do that. We only have one thing left to do, and that's pick the final song to play. And I could have played any of the songs on this album. I mean, we haven't even talked about Trilogy, which is a 9-minute wonder that I will probably find time to play on the radio one day. But we're going to play One It Finds, because this is a song that I think leans into your interest in science fiction and how that weaves into the mysteries of life. I love this song because it was the one that immediately spoke to me, because of, you know, the chorus, and I wanted to give you a chance just to talk about it.
So if there's one song on the record that I generally don't tell anybody what it's about, it's One It Finds. And I think that's partly because the song arose out of something very specific and a bit odd. And I don't even want to tell people exactly what it's about, because I don't want to limit the way people experience it when they listen to it. So, I mean, I've seen in a few of the reviews, people have talked about sort of an extraterrestrial element, and I think that is definitely legit and makes complete sense. Thematically, the song the song is sort of about a strange journey or dream of alienation and then reconciliation. And I love that it speaks to you, given that you have no idea what it's about. And I think that's where I'd like to leave it with everybody, is to think about all the ways in which it might speak to you without actually knowing anything about how it got written.
No, that's great. Well, it's a great song. And I certainly, when I listened to it, I felt I was the one it found. So it's really cool.
That's fabulous.
Yeah.
That's great.
This is Susan Jarvi with One It Finds from her fabulous new album, In the Clear. And you're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall. And Suzanne, it's been an absolute pleasure.
The pleasure is mine, honestly. I'm so honored. It's just been a thrill to chat with you today. So thank you so much for having me on.
Dashboard lights lit up smartly when the probe came. So I went down to your world with no name. Held on with confusion to my life. Held on to a stranger who appeared to be my. I'm the one it finds, I'm the one it finds, aren't I? I'm the one it finds, I'm the one it finds, aren't I? I'm the little light, I'm the little light that shines in the middle of your little night, binding. I'm the one it finds, aren't I? I'm the one it finds, I'm the one it finds, aren't I? And the little light that shines middle of your little night, finding my I'm the one it finds, aren't I?